stay on and I'll come back because sometimes I have a problem with the
Yeah.
internet dropping out. But
Okay, no problem.
okay. So, is there anything anyone would like to ask, or how about you, Steve? You sort of want to be part of this group?
Yeah, are you is this UK or is this Europe?
Well, it's just a mixture of people who can connect in the daytime, really.
Yeah. Is there anyone in the UK?
Excellent.
Well, there is
Germany.
Yeah, there is another lady who from London Way who wants to connect up during the day, but she's not joined on yet today, but we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, really, it's just an opportunity for a few more spaces on this thing. So I thought I'd open it up if anyone wanted to join, really.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're part of Europe anyway, so
yeah.
Okay.
It would be nice to find someone closer to home.
Yeah. Well, there are a few. I have done a couple of connections in the evenings. It's just, you know, it's busier in the evenings because that's obviously when we do a lot of things evenings here church wise. But you know, I'm still open for that, really. But we'll see. Okay. So, does anyone want to start with a question or want to share anything?
I'm gonna go ahead, ladies.
Just unmute yourself if you're.
I would think just start maybe because I had the advantage to have Mike here and could ask already a lot. So just maybe because there are just you in the group.
Okay, fine. Yeah, Regina's saying she's had me all weekend. So.
Oh, that's me.
If anyone would like to do anything, that's fine.
Well, I mean, I suppose we need this to put a bit of, to actually help me grow further and everything. So, you know, we've hung out with Ian since 2010.
Yeah.
And I've found my garden. Yeah. I'm not sure if that, is that separate to Eden? Isn't it?
Well, in a sense, they are, in the original, when God created everything, Eden was his garden and was in the heavenly realms. And the river of life came out of Eden, then watered the garden that he gave to Adam and Eve. So there was this absolute connection and overlap between the two, and they could walk in each other's gardens, and God walked in the cool of the day, and there was intimacy and relationship. When they followed the wrong pathway, the pathway back into Eden was blocked by the two cherubim and the fiery sword. And when Jesus came back, obviously, to open up the relationship, then the natural Eden and the spiritual Eden, you know, the spiritual Eden is still open, but the natural Eden, in one sense, then becomes the garden of our heart. So
that
as we engage with God within the spirit in us, you know, the kingdom in us and the presence of God in us, and we open up the first gates to connect up with the river of life, then that flows into our garden. So we are responsible for cultivating and tending that garden as Adam and Eve were. And of course, you know, when you think of the parable of the sower, the soil of the heart was in four different sorts, so we have to make sure that our heart is cultivated and looked after and make sure there's no hard areas, stony areas, areas full of weeds and stuff. That's good soil. And then we get to engage God there. I've certainly found that's where I go to talk to him in an intimate way and just hang out. So it's I use Psalm 23 as an access to that. because he makes me lie down in green pastures. So I've got plenty of green pasture in my garden. I've got quiet waters in my garden with the river of life flowing. So I can just go and sit. You know, there's a table or a tablecloth for me on the grass, and I can go and eat the things that are revelatory. But I also... hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. So, yeah, I also find that I need to tend it, cultivate it, so I get to grow things. You know, when I first engaged God in the garden of my heart, I didn't realize that's where it was, and the only little place I could see was a small little piece of grass and a tree, and there was this little bench where God would sit, Jesus would sit, and I would talk to him, and there was a swing, and sometimes I'd sit in the swing, and he'd push me, and we'd talk, but I had no idea where that was. It was just a visionary encounter, which I entered into completely, but later on I found, because I asked him, where is it, you know, and I say, this is the garden of your heart. Well, because I'd never engaged it, I never knew I could engage there as a dimensional reality, then it was just uncultivated and untended. So everything that I've received in the realms of heaven as a testimony, as an encounter, or things I've been given by God, I put in the garden of my heart, then I can tend them, look after them, use them, but also I can sow testimony into the garden and cultivate it. So I plant seeds. You know, anything that happens to me in heaven, any particular, maybe a scripture or anything God is really speaking to me about or I've had an encounter with, I can plant it by faith, you know, or I'm there, I can see it, I'd sort of dig a hole and put the seed in it and water it with the water of life and then command it to grow. And so when it grows, it produces fruit. And I've got lots of different trees, lots of different bushes, lots of different things with fruit on that have come out of my testimonies. So I then cultivate the garden, and then I can go back and take the fruit of those experiences as the testimony that brings me back through the doorway into it. So I meditate in it, eat the fruit, and then I can step back into the encounter. That gives me access to go into anything that God's done if I store it in my heart. And I think there are scriptures in Proverbs which sort of talk about the heart, and in Psalm 119, you know, I treasured or stored your word within my heart so that I won't sin against you. Proverbs 4, you know, from guard our heart with all diligence, from it flows life. You know, so life flows from that heart. And so it's really important to look after it and to grow it. And therefore, if we have testimony sown there, then that testimony flows out. And we can engage it. And then actually, if there's a testimony, we can take that fruit and give it to others who then can share their testimony. So, you know, whenever I do any activation of taking somewhere to a place I've been or opening up that pathway, what I'm doing is taking some of that fruit and then using that fruit of my testimony to enable other people to engage. You know, so building and developing the garden of our heart is really, really an important place. And as we do so, it opens up avenues to go to the other four chambers of the heart or three chambers and engage in a process of intimacy and transformation within our own lives. So it's a very, very important place. It is our garden, so we get to create there. You know, and you know, I encourage people to release their creativity. You know, what do they like in gardens? You know, I have a secret place within the garden where I go and I sit with God, and it's just a place of intimacy. You know, I have mountains in the garden that represent the mountains I've got in heaven. You know, I want it to reflect, I want my heart to reflect what's in heaven, as the garden that God gave to Adam and Eve should have reflected the Garden of Eden. And then earth would have reflected heaven because it was overlapping at that point. And then as Adam and Eve, if they took their responsibility as sons of God and had taken the blessing of God and the empowerment and then went and subdued the rest of the earth and brought the dominion of the garden to the rest of the earth, the whole earth would have been filled with the wonder of the garden and patterned after Eden and heaven. But obviously they messed that up. Now we don't have a physical garden, but we have the garden in our heart. And because when we open the first love gate, that river of life is connected back into heaven, then we can step back through and engage Eden in heaven. And so engaging the river of life, the different waterfalls, God's garden, tree of life, there's lots of different places and experiences there that we can personally engage in, and they're very revelatory experiences if we embrace them. And so that opens a whole pathway of relationship for us to draw from the source of life. And I think that's the key. Because the river of living water that's supposed to flow through us comes from the fountain that's there as we've originally taken the living water of Jesus and become alive spiritually. Then that river is supposed to go deeper and deeper. But if it just stays within our spirit, then literally it's like splashing around ankle deep. In Ezekiel 47, the picture of the river flowing out of the temple starts ankle deep, gets knee deep, gets waist deep, then it's completely out of depth, and wherever it goes, it brings life. So as we allow the spirit to flow through our spirit gates and that river to flow, engaging our soul, and then through that out to the world, then we need to expect it to bring life, and that's when it's flowing in its fullness. But most people have a trickle coming out of their first love gate because they never opened that. So we draw from a trickle of life where we can have a river. So as we continually build intimacy, opening that first love gate, surrendering to first love, as a daily part of our relationship with God, and then we can see that river increase. But we have to drink from the source. But the great thing is the source takes us back to the ultimate source, which is coming from the throne of God, and we have the throne of grace where, we can come confidently or boldly to that throne of grace and get whatever we need. And that's a place of rest where we're completely safe and secure. So all these things really are interconnected. And once we establish our own flow of life, then we can then engage more and more in God's flow. But I think it does take the desire to cultivate our heart and make sure that we have no hard areas. And so when we invite God into our heart, that's one of the things I would sit and talk to him about. Are there areas of my heart that are hard, that the soil is hard, that seed, good seed, does not produce? Are there areas that have memories in them, stones, that are memories that stop me engaging further into God? Are there cares or concerns in my heart, worries or anxieties, that would choke out what God wanted to produce and what I want to grow? So it is being serious about looking after our heart and engaging God there, and that's all part of the process of transformation and being equipped in that way to experience God. But I think a lot of people just realize that their spirit and the engagement with God is a dimensional reality that you can live in. And the same with our soul. It's within our body, but it's not actually a physical thing. So it's dimensional. So you can engage in your soul. You can engage those gateways of the soul, and you can learn to see a flow of life coming through it and those things if we take the time to open the gateways and make sure everything's flowing. But it does take some effort, some desire to make sure the soil is soil. If you've got a garden and you don't look after it, it will soon get overgrown, and generally what grows is all the stuff you don't really want to grow. The stuff you want to grow, you seem to have to look after it and make sure the soil's cared for and everything. So it is a very key thing. So when you said you've engaged a garden, where do you think that was? Let me if you unmute yourself, I'm not able to unmute you by the look of it. The mute button's at the top of the screen. When you move your mouse. No.
You can see us. No connection.
Okay. So can you unmute yourself, Steve?
I can hear you.
Okay. I can't hear him, so.
No.
Okay. All right. So does that sort of give you a sort of flavor for the garden and things? Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about?
Okay, I was last time in the garden, in my own garden. First, I couldn't get in, so I went later on during the day another time, and then I could enter in. I thought it was strange. I couldn't enter my own garden, but later I succeeded. I finally, after a long experience at the end of it, I received from the father a necklace with a ruby in it.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I know it stands for precious.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing with any sort of symbolic thing, like colors or gems or necklaces, things like that you're given, the best thing to do is to go back and ask God to give you the revelation of it. Because, I mean, I can give you an indication of what red might mean, or you know, what a necklace could be, or what a gem could mean, but it's actually what is God trying to communicate to you is the key.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is the key. There has to be a communication and developing you hearing from God. And the best way to do it is to begin to revisit the experience. So if you've written it down, or if you can think about the experience, if you've planted it in the garden of your heart and it's grown into seeds, then obviously that's a way you can go back and engage that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have an experience and you're unsure, what is the symbolism? You know, so you go, okay, I have a necklace. It was a red ruby. The best thing to do would be just to begin to think about that and to meditate on it. Just begin to then ask God, what does this mean? You know, because what you want to do is build up an interaction with God, which is conversational, in which you can ask him anything, and he can then communicate back to you as you learn to hear his voice. If you're able to step into heaven or into the garden of your heart or wherever and talk to him, and you can see it and you're in that experience, that's all the better, because you'll be able to see what he's saying. And but even if it's just, well, I'm just going to talk to him, I'm just going to think about this picture or this thing that I've been given, then you're looking to develop a flow of communication between the two of you. So, you know, I would, you know, rather than me trying to give you an interpretation, the best thing is to take the experience and go back to God and then spend time for him to reveal what it is he was trying to show you.
Yeah.
You know, because that revealing of what he was trying to show you is how you develop talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, most experiences have a purpose and a reason behind it, you know. So, you know, recently I've been given some things that I needed to go back to find out, well, what were they for, you know, because some things are pretty obvious. You know, you get given a crown, you know, it's a symbol of authority, but actually in the crown sometimes there are different colored jewels or different numbers of jewels. Yeah. So, you know, is it just it's just a crown, so it's a crown, so I'm just taking it as a symbol of authority. I know that I've been invested with authority to rule, so I have this crown. Mm-hmm. Or is it something more? You know, does the color mean something? Does the numbers of the color of the stones in the crown mean something? And the only way you can find out really is to really go back and then engage back into it to ask. You know, you're given a scepter, scepter, symbol of authority and rulership, seems quite obvious, but actually if it's got a green stone in it or a red stone, does that mean something? And does it relate to what's in my crown? And sometimes, you know, when I see people going to their mountains and I watch and observe in exercises what's going on, you know, I can see different colors and I can see the different way in which sometimes you get a mantle given to you that has a particular color. Yeah. You know, is that something that's to do with engaging with the seven spirits of God that have different colors? Is it something to do with something that you personally will relate to? So you may understand because it means something to you.
Yeah.
You know, often things that are placed around our neck are often symbols of seals, or sometimes you get a seal or you can use that. Or for when you get gems and jewels, sometimes they are something for you to look into. Look into the facets. You know, is it just something that's a plain round stone, or is it cut into facets? Because mm-hmm. that means that God may be wanting you to engage in things that he's showing you in it. You know, because, you know, there's a scripture about the manifold grace of God and the manifold wisdom of God, which means multifaceted.
Yeah.
And so sometimes God will just give you deeper things when you begin to go back and come around it. You know, the last thing to do is to just have an experience, be given something, and then just do nothing with it. You know, it's really important, because God wouldn't do it if it wasn't something that he wanted you to engage in. So take it like that as something important, and then look to develop what it means. You know, I personally recently had an experience where I was given a seal around my neck on a chain around my neck, and you know, it was quite ornately decorated and in sort of a gold thing, and I sort of had an insight, but I went back to wisdom in my case because I knew it was about rulership in an area.
Mm-hmm.
What is this for? And then she gave me a staff and said, you can use this seal with the staff, and I have used it in that way. So, you know, I think the key in lots of these things, draw from an experience everything you possibly can. Because when you go back into an encounter, those encounters will often get deeper. Because when I have an encounter with God, very often I'm not observing what's around. I'm just fixed on Jesus or God or what the main, because if he's there, I want to be looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when I go back, I notice that he had a particular colored sash, or he had a particular this, or he was carrying something, or there were several angels around, or something that I didn't notice the first time.
Yeah.
And so I've tried and be more observant, and I initially started to do that by going back, right, I always journal everything. I go back into the encounter, I begin to meditate in it and go into the picture, and then I picked up things that I never picked up the first time. And they were all important things because they led me into a bigger picture. Now I've learned to become a bit more observant when I'm in an encounter, and I will look to try and see and engage where it is and what I'm doing and why it's there. But then that's taken me some time to develop that. Whether it's just a personal gift or something, you know, I pick up symbolism really easily, so it just seems to flow. It just seems to make sense to me, a lot of things. I just seem to understand because I suppose I've spent a lot of time doing it. You know, so,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Hiya. Hi.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I can hear you, but my internet is left out.
Okay. All right.
Okay. How are you, Sulat?
No, well, we've just sort of been talking about gardens and experiences with God and stuff. So do you know Steve? Steve's from Wales, I think, is it?
Yeah, North Wales. Hi.
North Wales. Where are you from?
I'm in London.
London, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in London, but I'm from Kenya.
Okay, so Regina's from Germany.
Hello. Hi.
And then, well, your hangout name is Twinkle, but
yes, it's an easy one. Jardim. That's so difficult.
Okay, so we're now sort of getting a European feel for some connection. So, is there anything you want to ask, Anne?
No, not at the moment, because what you were speaking about, that's what I've been doing this week, just some of the encounters I've had over the years, like God has just been telling me to go back to them and just look and see what is going to happen.
Yeah.
And a few of them, I thought they were quite dramatic, but when I got back, I find to mind that just what happened at that time, and even out of just that one encounter and maybe seeing something else which was there that I did not see, then that opens up like a gate to even deeper encounter and deeper relations, which is, I think that's one of the things that I'm doing this month, just going back to like years of encounters and just seeing what, you know, where he wants to take me from there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, because they all become stepping stones, and I think always back into more. And I think that's a really key understanding for people. You know, I've sort of sadly talked to quite a lot of people and shared something they had as an encounter, you know, many years ago, and it's still an encounter, but then they have no more. You know? That was it, because they just never took that encounter and then, you know, redeveloped it, and it became a doorway that we could then go back into. And I think that is a really important key. You know, I think that takes me back really to, you know, when God used to speak to me in the Word, and I'd get a verse, and I would highlight it and underline it, but I never really went much further with it. You know, I didn't know what to do with. Often I'd write, maybe produce a sermon from it or something that I have intellectual understanding of. But actually, God, you need to draw from these truths, this life, so that it enters, you know, you enter into it. And then you can then use that as a springboard or a stepping stone onwards into other things. You know, and I think all encounters can become doorways into something fresh and something new if we're willing to pursue them and develop them as pathways in our life. And I think that's one of the key things that I've found. You don't develop a pathway by walking on it once. You have to revisit it and revisit it. You know, just like, you know, if you walk out in the woods somewhere and you walk on a path once, you know, that will probably be a walk. But if you carried on the same pathway day in, day out, it would soon be trodden down and you would be able to see where to go. And it's the same in spiritual encounters. If we revisit them and re-engage them, then it enables us to become a pathway that's ingrained in us, because our mind stores and records through creating neural pathways and links to memories. And if we have a memory of one thing, it's very dramatic, it may create an impression that really gets stored and we have a memory of it. But a lot of memories, they just get chewed up and re-prepared, so some more memories can come. There's a finite limit to how much our brain can contain, so, you know, it gets shredded. So if you don't use something, then it fades and sometimes completely goes. Whereas if you keep using it, the brain says, this is important, this is valued, I will form a pathway to it, and then where it's stored in our hearts is a connection. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, anything that we've gone to over and over again in the realms of heaven, now I don't need to walk the pathway, I can go to a particular place in an instant. Whereas when I was developing it, you know, I was developing the pathway, I would keep walking the pathway, you know, when I was walking the pathway in Eden, you know, I would go in the river of life, I'd go to the waterfalls, you know, I'd go and cross over into the garden of God, and I would just walk that out, you know, and in walking it out, it became part of me that then now I can go to any of those places just by thinking about it and stepping into it, you know, but it took time to do that and to develop it, just as it would any natural pathway. You know, any natural pathway takes time to develop, you know, and the same with the spiritual one. So it's all good, you know. But as with anything in the realm of the kingdom, God responds to desire, and we have to learn to develop and frame desire in us. And that means actually really spending time in something, as you would if you desired something naturally. You know, whenever I want to go and buy something, and you know, usually as a guy, I like toys and, you know, sort of techie stuff, and I will look at it, I will do research about it, you know, I'll find out, you know, I'll even download a manual from what a piece of kit is, so I can look at the manual before I've got it. So I really frame the desire, and I begin to actually think about and look at those things, and then it creates a desire in me that then I'll go and buy it, you know, and I'll find out the best price for it or whatever, but I'll be focused in thinking about that thing. And because I'm really geeky, I will go and find a forum that other people have maybe used that piece of kit on, and I'll go and look at what other people have said about it, and I'll find out testimonies of whether it was good, find out all the quirks about something so that I'll understand, you know, how, if there's this goes wrong, I'll know how to fix it, because I'll do all that usually before I bought it, because I want to find out, is this good? Is it for me? Actually, the desire builds. The more I look into something, I get the desire builds, and then I go and buy it. Then I've got it, and then usually for a period of time while I'm getting used to using it or having fun with it or developing it, I'll hang out on those forums and I'll listen to things that are going on with it, you know. And then when it's become my piece of kit and I know everything, I use it, it's totally familiar with me, then I probably stop going to those things because it's now part of my life. And it's the same thing with desire in our hearts. If we have a desire for something in our destiny or an area of calling or just something maybe in God we want to know more of, are we prepared to frame that desire up by thinking about it, by looking at it, by going, spending time around it? Because that, when those desires are formed in us, then God births those desires. You know, God gives us the desires of our hearts. Sometimes, even the wrong things, if we desire them the most, if we keep focusing and asking him something, you know, sometimes he basically gives it to us, and then we learn the consequences of asking for the wrong thing. But what he really wants to do is to give us the good things so that our desires are aligned with his. And that means opening our hearts and drawing near to him and getting close to him so that he begins to engage our hearts, and then our hearts begin to be filled with the things that he desires for us, which is our destiny. You know, and I spend much time around the ark of the presence of God in the Holy of Holies, opening my heart so he can write my destiny and unveil it to me, like as he writes on the tablets of our hearts, so my desires get drawn towards things. Because I've just spent so much time in intimacy in his presence and with deliberately opening my heart and asking him to write things on my heart and to reveal the destiny that he has for me on, so that my heart draws me towards it, then I find those things just start to get birthed. And I don't actually do anything. I spend preparing my heart and drawing near to that desire, looking into it, then I find God just starts to open things up around it and for it, just because I've cultivated the desire, you know. And I find around the ark is a wonderful place to draw near to the things of God, because you can engage the end and you can engage the beginning of things in our lives, and you can bring the future into the present, and you can deal with the past and all sorts of things there around our desire. And desire is one of the things that a friend of mine used to say, you know, pursuit is the evidence of desire. If you truly desire something, you will pursue it. And you won't stop until you have it, because it's a real desire, you know. And some of the things we probably say we desire, we haven't really probably framed enough that they're actually contained within our heart, and then that allows God to bring them into manifestation. So, you know, it's one of those things. You know, I think we live in an age and a culture that's very instant, and people want things now. Instant gratification, you know, push a button, get a microwave meal in 5 minutes, rather than spend half an hour or an hour preparing it and then sitting down and cooking it and eating it or whatever. It's like push a button, and therefore there's less value. You know, do I really value a microwave meal that costs a couple of quid and, you know, it's probably fills a hole in my stomach, but actually there's no real satisfaction in eating it generally. But actually when someone's prepared a meal and you sit down together and you eat it, actually there's something about it which actually is fellowship and life, you know. And I think God wants us to have that sort of relationship with him, where we're taking the time to enjoy him and find out the things that are in his heart, and then our hearts get drawn towards it. You know, if God has a desire for me, I want to know, and then I want that desire, because I know ultimately I'm going to be totally fulfilled, satisfied, feeling totally complete when those desires get outworked, you know. And over the last year, I guess I feel probably more fulfilled and satisfied in what I'm doing, because I know I'm outworking destiny and I'm outworking the desires, because I've spent time drawing near to him. But to start with, I resisted. You know, I knew God was wanting me to take some steps, but I resisted, because although I would think, oh, well, yeah, that would maybe good because it's what God wants, I knew that actually it would take a change in my lifestyle or a change in my heart or desire. And, you know, and selfishly for a few months, I wasn't really prepared for it. But then when I gave in and I said, okay, God, I just surrender. If that's what you desire me to do, I'm going to start actually meditating around that, and I'll open my heart to it. And I took one step of obedience that God said to do, and it opened up everything that I'm doing right now. You know, and although, you know, I doubted whether I would be able to do what I'm doing now and have the time to do it, because I was obedient, and I then began to pursue what God had as a desire, now I feel, you know, happier and more content, busier than I've ever been in my life, but totally satisfied and not worn out, and because I know it's God's heart and God's desire for me. So, you know, I don't carry extra burdens. It's not heavy. It just feels light and just feels like this is what I was always created for. You know, but Yeah, it was me. I had to surrender to that desire and then pursue it, you know, and then be willing to go through the doors that God opened out and follow him through it, you know. So, you know, I think I would encourage people to really find out what are the desires of God for us, what are the desires of his heart. You know, because they will be things that are already agreed with our destiny and our scroll. We just have to draw near to him enough to discover them and then pursue them. You know, and it's desires fulfilled are wonderful. You know, desires pursued takes discipline. You know, in this phrase, you know, you go from desire to discipline to delight. No one really likes the bit in the middle, but that's what it takes to line ourselves up with the desire so that it can become a delight. And that takes sometimes some effort on our part and willingness to be changed in that area and to go through the process. You know, whenever God calls us to something, there's always a journey to go to get there. You know, again, most prophetic stuff that we get released over our lives is not instantly for now. It's calling us to aspire to go on a journey rather than, I give it to you now and you've got it now and that's it. You know, God sent many people on journeys, Abraham being obviously the one we always see. Yeah, go, because you're going to pursue something. And, you know, there's many others that went on journeys that God inspired them to go on. Okay. Anyone else want to ask anything?
Yeah, so this morning I felt just to spend my time with the Lord here in the room where we met during the conference, and I had the impression, and I'm not sure if this is right, that when I kind of was opening and surrendered myself, that here in the left corner, I'm just sitting before the flag in the picture of Jesus, here in the left corner there was this angel connected to one of the four faces of God, like for a glimpse of a moment I saw kind of a lion. Could that be?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was very excited. I didn't really, I was thanking God, and then I had a commitment to Elian to take the baby.
Yeah.
And she came in screaming, and the moment I took her in my hand, she was peaceful. And then I was walking around with her here, and she was as if she was watching at least 15 minutes, was completely calm, and I talked to her here, the angels, and just, it was amazing. So I just wanted to make sure that this is kind of could be,
in a sense. Everything gets stored, recorded in matter.
Yeah. So
if you think everything that went on over the weekend, all the words that were spoken, all the worship that was released, that whole room contains it. It's the record of it is stored, so that can become now a place of engagement. You can re-engage there. And so the memory of, you know, we had the four different angels and the four faces of God turned up in different times. Although, you know, are they still there? Well, the record of them within the fabric of the room is, and therefore you can re-engage into the memory and engage the experience. I mean, it's how things work like that. You know, it's like, you know, when you go into a place that feels cold and shivery and so, ooh, what was that? Well, you're sensitively picking up something that's in the fabric of that atmosphere or in, you know, because it literally gets stored within matter. So within the walls, within the carpet, it's stored, memory of everything. You know, so you have those things that you can step back into, and then as you've done, meditate on them and then re-engage with that and step back into it. You know, so it's a great thing to do. You know, I wish I was there. My room's been empty for the weekend, so because when you're in it, it's like you're sort of talking. It's like, although I was engaging the angels, angels were really there for the people in the room rather than me. You know, but those four angels go around with me all the time. So, you know, they're great to engage with. You know, so I think over in that left-hand corner, which was my right-hand corner, the left-hand with the picture and the flags, yeah, was the Winds of Change, the Angel of Winds of Change, and the eagle and the lion were around that as well. So the lion certainly was on that face. So yeah, it was good. Yeah. Excellent. Probably not as for those who weren't there, you're probably thinking, ah, okay. but the principles apply, you know, in any situation we can re-engage in things, and that shows desire. You know, if anything's just a one-off experience, it was great, but when it becomes more and more in tune to us, we engage in it, you know, we draw from it over and over and over again. You know, and you know, one encounter with an angel Winds of Change is not going to do it. You know, what that angel does in terms of releasing a new season and releasing change into our life and blowing the heralding things, and so you know, the wind that blows as a mighty rushing wind and bringing in a new thing. You know, you got to keep going back. You know, you don't engage an angel. You know, the other one, one of the others was transformation, and the other one, one of those was refining fire and the sound of many waters. You know, you have to keep re-engaging those because there's so much. You know, when you step into the refining fire, yes, things come to the surface and God purifies things, but there's usually more when you step back in. So, yeah, keep stepping back into it. Thanks. Okay. Anyone else?
Are there any links to this weekend? Last weekend?
There may be once I've dealt with all the audio.
Yeah.
There was like 10-12 sessions of it, so it was a really good time with hungry people. You know, there was such a hunger. You know, people travel from all over Germany to be there, and they were just hungry. And there was an agreement that was made between heaven and earth, which opened up heaven. You know, it's really important to get those agreements, because although I went into the heavens before I went, and I saw some things, and I had some mandates particularly.
Yeah.
They were heavenly mandates. But when I went and said, look, this is what God has mandated me to do, but are you in earthly agreement, because this is your nation? Let's come into agreement. And when they agreed, and I opened up an everlasting door over the area, it just heaven was open, and yeah, the worship was just totally open, and you know, we did some things and entered in because there was that connection and openness that was there. So agreement's really important in things like that. You know, I don't go into a nation and then presume I can do something. I need agreement with the people of that nation.
Yeah.
So that we bring heaven and earth into alignment, and then you get an outpouring of what God wants. And it was a really, really good you know, one of the best weekends, I think, in terms of going anywhere that I've ever been. Because it was just such a sense of the presence of God and this hunger, which is so easy to speak when people are hungry.
Yeah.
it just draws out, yeah. You know. You know, I have to sort of shape all the PowerPoints and basically get all the sessions divided up, because there was, you know, things didn't quite go to the flow that I was necessarily going to do. So one session was going to be one session, and it took three. So I have to now get the PowerPoints to go with the actual audio and tidy it all up. But I will, you know, probably post it at some stage once I've sorted it all out. You know, it was pretty, you know, significant for Germany and for Europe and various things, as God in the last day really did some prophetic things, released some revelation, and we did some things together. But the conference itself was a basic opening up of, you know, what God is saying, what God is calling people to in terms of Joshua generation and raising up people around the world to become fathers and mothers of the next generation. So it was an introduction, really, to that. But it was very experiential. So we had lots of exercises where we stepped in and experienced God, did things together, which was great. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay.
There was a couple there for Wales, actually.
Was that?
Yeah, from Pam and Jeff Smith, I think. They're from Monmouth, although they said Monmouth got a bit of a identity crisis because it's not really sure whether it's in Wales or England. not really. North Wales, anyway. But it was good. They engaged in it, which was great. So, yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
If you kind of
I've lost you.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
If you send me your email address, Steve, or also the others, I could also send you the link, because one of the worship leaders was taping it, but he is in a moment very busy with school. But I think in a few weeks' time, and I also could connect you with an English couple, or Wales, Welsh English couple. They are still in our house. This is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. That'll be good. Okay. I think, you know, in these sort of sessions, it will be good just for, you know, to come. Prepare, you know, what is it that you want to do? You know, what would you like me to do? You know, is there anything particular in terms of subjects or engagements or, you know, activations or things? You know, so that, you know, I'm happy to hang out and see what God's doing, and we can just go with the flow. But if there's anything particular, you know, it just sort of enables you to get what you want out of it. You know, these sessions really are for you. So, you know, what you want out of the sessions, you know, depends on what you ask. You know, in the sense, I sometimes I'll get a mandate for something, and I get authorization to open something up, and I'll seek God for that. But generally, I just want to serve, and so whatever you want, you know, I want to respond to and look to help. So, you know, we'll do these every couple of weeks. And, you know, next time just have something. If you spend maybe some time thinking, okay, what is it that God would want me to do? Or is there anything that God's opening up right now or anything I can help with? And, you know, just let me know. And, you know, see how things develop. Because it takes some time to develop sort of some relationship. Because the reason I do it this way is because it's relational.
Yeah.
I can post loads of teaching and stuff, and people won't know me, and I won't know them.
Yeah,
it's that relationship, and I think you have to establish that. You know, Regina and I have been hanging out for, you know, nearly 12 months, so we've developed relationship, and so, you know, I've answered many questions, and you know, we've been to many places together in the heavens. So, you know, but I know when there's a few more people come, it can be a little bit sort of, oh, you know, do I ask this or what do I do? So, you know, feel free, you know. You know, and if there's anything you want to know about me, or if you want to ask anything, then you know there's no problem with that. You know, I'm really open for any sort of questions or anything that you want me to share. So, okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Brilliant.